Great. Okay. Bardar, everybody. Good morning. I'm Auriel Miller and I'm director of the IWA. For those of you who don't know us, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debate and influencing change in Wales through policy, research and advocacy, our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and far further afield. We're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. Today is the first of four events in our IWA Cardiff Media Summit 2021 series. We'd like to thank the University of South Wales, who's kindly sponsored our new media audit, and the members of the IWA's Media Advisory Group for their invaluable assistance with both the media audit and the summit. Today's event kicks off this series by looking at the media landscape in Wales and how we all need to change and adapt to a new COVID-effective world and digitally reliant citizenship. Our second event on Tuesday looks at the importance to Wales's valuable screen sector of investing in skills and focuses on the finding of Plusdoor's Screen Work 2020 report. Our third event on Wednesday is looking at news in Wales, who creates it, who reports it, and who we can trust to provide our factual reporting. Finally, our fourth event next Thursday will focus on S4C and its strategic vision for its future. I'd like to start by thanking Dr. Marlene Komorowski for all her work creating the 2020 media audit and for her ongoing commitment to the project as the pandemic has delayed it over the past months. Just going to sort out my screen, here we go. This audit was an update of a piece of work we last did in 2015. The IWA Wales media audits take a snapshot of the facts and figures that should inform discussions about the media in Wales. We wanted to see how the media landscape has changed over the last 5 years and what the data was telling us about the trends in the consumption and production of media across the various sectors. The audit runs to around 200 pages and covers topics and sectors we can't hope to cover today, such as Wales's video game sector, community radio, and publishing. We will be publishing it soon and hope it will be a useful reference, not just for the IWA, but for anyone working in media policy. Marlene started this work in November 2019 and concluded her analysis in March 2020. We had originally planned to launch the report in June of last year, 2020. But of course, and I hardly need to say this, our world then changed profoundly. And the IWA has not been immune to all the challenges which the pandemic has created. This means that the 2020 IWA Wales media audit looks back at where the media was in March 2020. It is a snapshot of Wales's media immediately before COVID began to bite. But today is very definitely about what comes next. So before we hear from Marlene about the report's findings, I'd like first to zoom out and set out how the IWA is thinking about the future of the media in Wales. A healthy media in any nation means focusing on three things. First, our facts. We need news in Wales to help inform people and let them make their own minds up about the decisions and actions of those in power, particularly in our devolved parliament and government. A recurring theme of the media post-COVID has been the inadequacy of the initial response in terms of communicating the different rules in the nations of the UK, and how news organisations, to their credit, very quickly got better at it. It should not have taken a pandemic for people in Wales to regularly see their ministers on television, explaining their decisions and being subject to scrutiny. Our 2015 audit clearly highlighted the democratic deficit in Wales's media. Since then, there has been some positive progress and a few steps backwards. What we really needed was a step change, helping citizens navigate the wavy and often blurry lines of devolution should already have been a routine part of the day job for Wales's media. It wasn't, it isn't now, and we still need to do more. The IWA will be focusing on the practical steps that the next Welsh government can take to improve this. And today is the start of that conversation. Second, our fictions. The representation and portrayal of Wales and its communities in all their diversity needs to improve. We do not see our stories told on screen, and this shapes how we understand ourselves, our past, our present, and our future. Wales's screen sector is a major and exciting success story, an important and growing part of our economy where Wales can proudly stand shoulder to shoulder with the best in the world, and does. In our second event tomorrow, we will hear about the challenges that creates in meeting the increasing demand for productions to be made in Wales. But we'd like to see more of those world-class productions being about Wales, stories of Welsh life in all its diversity being told. Told to the citizens of Wales to help us better know ourselves, told to the audiences across the world, so Wales's distinctive identity can be seen, explored, and understood. The stronger and more rooted our creative sectors become, the more likely it is that those productions will come to exist. But is there a role for devolved government in funding work that portrays Wales on screen and elsewhere? We want to know what you think. Third, our rules. At the IWA, we're asking ourselves the question, is it possible to hold free and fair elections in Wales? How would we know? It would be unwise to assume that our small size as a nation means that we'd be overlooked by those using the media and social media in sophisticated but often dishonest ways to influence democratic decisions. In 2015, we could hardly have predicted quite the scale and pace of change in how social media spreads misinformation and disinformation. Such interference in elections, whether we consider it has been successful or not, is now endemic. The problem now is that regulation was designed for a different time. The powerful entities we need to regulate today simply didn't exist when the legislation was drawn up. This means it's not often quite clear what rules, if any, have been broken, and indeed who could enforce them. This is far from a Wales issue, and while we may only be a small player on the world stage, that does not mean that we should look inwards nor bury our heads in the sand. Everyone's democracy matters because each individual's life matters. Finally, to have a thriving media economy, we need a thriving media ecology. So underpinning all three of these things is the need to invest in media skills and supply chains. We want more success stories of creative professionals and businesses rooted in Wales, because these will make it easier to make high quality news, which in turn holds our Welsh government to devolved government to account. Clwstwr Creadigol have undertaken a separate but complementary piece of work exploring this often neglected issue, and we will hear more about that tomorrow in our second event. In 2015, we concluded that there needed to be a step change in media across Wales. Our 2020 IWA Wales media audit shows some positive progress, but not across the board. Some steps forward and some steps back, like I said earlier. Without wanting to diminish the hard work that has gone into the progress made, this is clearly not the step change we wanted to see. What the 2020 audit did not capture was how resilient Wales's media would prove to be. We have heard many stories during the last 9 months about broadcasting and broadcasters and others moving quickly and finding new ways to connect, to inform, and to entertain people against the backdrop of the global public health crisis that we are all experiencing. I'm sure we'll hear many such stories today, but this event is about looking forward. Our media wasn't where it needed to be before the pandemic, and a strong media has never been more important to modern democracies. Today's event, as well as the others later this week, forms part of the IWA's ongoing engagement with the future of media policy affecting Wales. Policy alone will not fix this, but we can and we should explore the ways the Welsh Government in particular can drive and support greater ambition for our creative economy, invest in local news, support skills, and be a clear and strong voice for modernising regulation. The debate about the future devolution of broadcasting policy and/or regulation is an important one, but it must be purposeful. Advocates of the devolution of broadcasting must be clear about what they want to achieve and how exactly devolution would do that. What this debate should not do is obscure the potential ways forward which are already open to us within the powers we already have. The power to demand better would be nothing without the skills, infrastructure, and finances to make it a reality. And we believe we have the shape of the way forward. We want to see an ambitious strategy for Wales's creative economy with increased amounts of funding smartly and transparently invested back into Wales's creative economy. We need to recognise the importance of a healthy creative sector to the civic and democratic role of the wider media. A contestable fund for local news, whether online, in print or on the air, to bolster a vital pillar of our democracy, which the gut market clearly no longer supports. We recognise the risks and challenges of a government directly supporting news, but we believe that the time has come for a conversation about how this can be done in a way that preserves the media's independence. Wales's government and political parties being a clear and strong voice within the UK for modern broadcasting regulation, which addresses the ever-evolving challenges that social media has brought. And last, a cohesive strategy for future skills in the media sector, one where we're clear what good does look like, improving diversity, security of employment, and meeting the increasing demands for more productions to be made in Wales off the back of our recent successes. We don't intend to design this from scratch ourselves. We intend to work collaboratively with partners across the media and creative sector to understand how devolved policy can complement the work they're already doing, where the challenges and risks are, and how to overcome them. So today's event and our other events later this week are about hearing from you and from experts in the sector to inform this ongoing work. A strong creative sector in Wales can only improve our capacity to know our facts, write our fictions, and ensure all players in the information space play by the same rules, rules that we have had a say in. I'd now like to hand over to Professor Ruth McElroy of the University of South Wales, sponsor of the 2020 media audit and source of invaluable advice throughout the process, for which we are extremely grateful, for a few words. Ruth.
Thank you, Ariel. Chroeso bore da pawb. Good morning, everybody. It's a delight to see so many of you here, and it's a real pleasure to be online with you all today to discuss the state of play of media in Wales. In the now halcyon days of 2019, the Centre for Media and Culture in Small Nations at the University of South Wales started to have a conversation with the IWA about the need to update the 2015 media audit. Many of you here were part of the IWA's media policy group who produced that audit, led by Angela Graham. Looking back on our work from the vantage point of 2019, I was struck by what we had argued about cuts to media in and for Wales, about the decline of news and of journalism in Wales, but also what we did not address. So, for example, we made relatively little mention of social media as a source of news, and still less about the impact of global subscription video on demand services such as Amazon Prime, Netflix, and Apple TV. Looking back, that seems remarkable. And I think that tells us just how rapidly change can happen. Looking from this side of the election of Trump in the USA, for example, has really pushed forward debates around news and about the regulation of news. As Oriel suggested, there's a really key debate to be had about the necessity of updating the regulatory framework. So I'm delighted that as part of its civic mission, the University of South Wales has sponsored this update and review. The university is committed to working in partnership with the IWA, but also with anyone who cares about the democratic, cultural, and economic role of the media in Wales. I want to thank Oriel and also Andy Regan and Laura Knight for organising this event. And in particular, I want to thank Dr. Marlene Komorowski for her sterling work in pulling together this research during a time of unprecedented pressure on all of us. There's a great deal for us to discuss and to debate here, and I'm going to hand over quite promptly now to Marlene to get us into the detail of her findings. Thank you, everyone. Diolch yn fawr. Marlene.
Hello, and thank you. I am trying now to share my screen first. I hope this works. Welcome and thank you again for joining the IWA Media Summit and this presentation of the IWA Media Audit 2020. My name is Marlene Komorowski and I was the researcher and consultant for the media audit, on which I have worked from October to April in total, in from 2019 to 2020. I'm excited to be able to finally present to you some of the highlights of the data. that the media audit will showcase. To my knowledge, the final version of the media audit will be published in the coming weeks. So this here just gives some of the highlights of the audit to kickstart the summit and to hopefully start some interesting discussions around the media summit this year. Well, first, I would like to highlight that media plays an important role for the Welsh culture, civil society, and economy. However, at the same time, the media industry is in constant change, being challenged by political, cultural, and technological development. This includes the impact of digitization on the media sectors, which implies also issues like the rise of disinformation and trust issues, as well as the globalization of the market, which brings new competition to Wales' media market from international media corporations like Facebook or Netflix, for example. Additionally, the last year has also brought new uncertainties that the media industry in Wales has to face, including the impact of Brexit and COVID-19. It needs to be noted here that the data in the media audit has been gathered before the pandemic, so the findings do not reflect the changes and trends that have been identified, which could now massively be disturbed. But we felt like this is the right moment to give an update to you so we can see in the future how also COVID-19 and Brexit impacts the local media industry. Additionally, due to COVID-19, the media audit publication and summit has been postponed. So therefore the findings have not been updated with data past March 2020. So for example, the new Ofcom Media Nations report has been published after that, which is data that is not captured here. So just briefly for your information, as you might know, these will be the findings of the third media audit, which builds on the media audit 2008 and 2015. So we tried to highlight the changes that occurred specifically in the last 5 years. The findings are based on desk research and brings data from various sources together, including Ofcom data, public data, data from annual reports from BBC, ITV, and more. Additionally, I conducted a number of expert consultations from November to March 2020, so to get some industry insights and really also involve the local media stakeholders. So thank you for everyone who took the time to talk to me last year and share the valuable insights. The presentation here today will highlight the developments and key data from four sectors specifically. This is television, radio, press and news, and digital media and the internet. First, television, which has really become a cornerstone for impacting Welsh culture, language and economy. So in Wales, viewers have access to public service broadcasting channels, including the ones with also local content for Wales, which are BBC Wales, ITV Wales, S4C, as well as local broadcasters from That's TV and local TV. Additionally, public service broadcasting channels, Channel 4 and 5, which do not broadcast local content for Wales, and other commercial private channels and broadcasters are available. So based on our findings, what I would like to highlight is that the TV sector is really highly impacted by digitization, as less and less minutes per day are spent in Wales watching TV. Today, almost a whole hour less time is spent per day watching TV in Wales compared to 5 years ago. So that's the red line, as you can see. This includes also a drop of watching the public service broadcasting channels. And the most watched channels are still today the local BBC One Wales and ITV Wales, which also broadcast a lot of local content. So based on literature and general trends, we can expect that this drop in watching TV increases also further in the future. And this is why we really need to start rethinking TV for the future as well. As mentioned, viewers in Wales have access to local content for Wales. So based on our estimations in 2018-19, viewers in Wales were able to watch a total of 5,819 hours of original content for Wales on the 7 local channels. This does not include repeats. So this means that on average, about 15 hours per day of original local content is available, which is, in my opinion, a really great number to reach. While the number of hours provided by BBC Cymru Wales and ITV Wales increased during the last 5 years slightly, S4C's provision decreased. S4C showed almost 3% less local original content per year. That is a total of 4 hours less per week between 2014-15 and 2018-19. So this is one of our key findings. However, I would like to highlight that there have been also positive developments, like the increase in spending on local content by the public service broadcasters, the increase in number of hours broadcasters, and so on. So more of this can be found in the audit. One explanation for the decline of hours of first-run UK originate content for Wales transmitted by S4C between 2015 and 2019 is that following the last license fee settlement, BBC Wales was asked to find savings of £10.7 million by 2017 as part of the Delivering Quality First programme. As the funding structure of S4C will change in 2022, we might see an impact on this trend and a change in the output that is generated by S4C again. Another key finding is that even though local drama productions from Wales experience increasing popularity, viewers in Wales are still the least satisfied about the portrayal of Wales in public service broadcasting content. So this is something that also Aurel already highlighted in the beginning. So for example, shows like TV series like Keeping Faith and Hidden series experience huge success in the UK. Both series commissioned by S4C were in the UK top 10 drama premieres on BBC iPlayer in 2018. And because of the popularity, were later broadcasted on the network. Other local series such as Back in Time for the Factory, The River Wye and Hidden Wales also performed strongly with okay audiences. And another further success was the Nordic Noir Hinterland. And we have found that while commissioning production by the BBC in Wales has increased, it's still one of the lowest shares of among all of the areas in the UK, but that there are still considerable shortcomings in how far BBC specifically portrays Wales in its content. The Welsh Affairs Committee found in 2016 that within the BBC, the level of portrayal of Wales to the rest of the UK has declined. Public service broadcasting services were rated lower by viewers in Wales compared to those in England and Scotland for delivery regarding showing different parts of the UK and representing the nations. Also, Ofcom's 2017 distinctiveness research found that some people felt that the BBC often has a London-focused perspective. In this regard, it could be questioned if, for example, the Made Outside of London obligations for BBC, which was updated in June 2019 and which comes into effect with regards to titles broadcast from this month on, has the right effect on local production and ways of the portrayal of Wales. We discussed more on this in the media audit as well. Finally, I would like to highlight how in the last 5 to 10 years, Wales managed to become a production center in the UK for high budget productions for domestic and international audiences in TV and film. There has been an increase of 217% for the GVA in this area in Wales in the last 17 years. One of the reasons for this is that Wales now has a number of studios that attract such productions ranging from TV and VOD, like Netflix and Hollywood productions, which are now being shot and produced in Wales in greater number. Still, we also would like to highlight that there has been an increasing concern about a lack of local skills in this regard. And I believe that tomorrow in the next session of the Media Summit, more research and more insights will be presented. So check this out if you're interested in the skill shortage area. So in conclusion, even though we can find positive trends in the TV and film industry in the last couple of years, the sector faces further challenges and uncertainties based on policy changes and increasing competition. We highlight these aspects in the audit, which include, for example, also discussions about how local television players change the market, discussions about the TV license fee, the new financing structure of S4C to be implemented by 2022, and the BC Charter midterm review and more. Now to the second sector, radio. We have found that people in Wales can listen to more than 100 radio stations in total. The number of stations has highly increased in recent years. So on DAB in Wales, there are now 78 channels, radio channels, compared to 45 in 2015. The rise in number of radio stations available to listeners in Wales can be explained by the increasing DAB coverage and licenses made available by Ofcom. At the same time, radio can be seen as an above average important media in Wales, actually. With 22 hours radio listening per week on average, listeners in Wales listen to more radio every week than in any other nation of the UK, which is around just 19 to 20 hours in other nations. and the UK average. And listening to radio is stable, not as I already showed for TV viewing. So it's not as impacted by digitization and shifting viewer and listener behaviors. However, the picture for local commercial radio is very different. Local commercial services have a lower proportion of listening hours in Wales than in any other nation. Additionally, commercial radio in Wales has the lowest commercial revenue per head of any of the UK nations, which decreased by 10% in 2018 alone. And we have found that consolidation and the shutting down of channels, especially on national level in Wales, can be reported. These findings suggest that the business case for running a local commercial radio station in Wales is more challenging than elsewhere in the UK. And indeed, it can be found that next to an increasing number of community radio stations that have been made available in the last couple of years in Wales, BBC radio services are still the biggest competitors and having the highest listening shares of all in Wales. So to show this in more detail, we found that the BBC UK-wide radio have by far the highest listening share, as I already mentioned, with 49% in Wales. When combined with BBC Nation's local services, the corporation share of listening rises to 57%. This is more than in any other nation. Global and Communicorp, which between them operate the Capital Hard Smooth networks in Wales, account for 19%, while Bauer, which owns Swansea Sound and The Wave, has 9% of share of listening. Also, there are no specific obligations for UK-wide network radio channels of the BBC in terms of content specific for Wales. To our knowledge, there's also no provision of Welsh local content in terms of outputs on UK-wide network radio channels of the BBC in Wales. This is of course creates additional competitive struggles for the local commercial radio market. As we can see, music is the most valued type of content, and while BBC network radio covers this kind of content, there's clearly more competition being created. At the same time, we found that commercial UK-wide brands locally delivered have cut down on local content. The result is that a majority of content on 5 of the top 10 Welsh radio stations is now produced in London. And following a consultation in June 2018, Ofcom revised the localness guidelines, which meant that there is no longer an expectation under Ofcom's localness guidelines that, for example, weekday breakfast will be locally made. Also, some local stations have attempted to reduce their Welsh language outputs or have even withdrawn completely their Welsh language output. Ofcom additionally announced in 2019 that all of Wales is a single approved area from the previous 3 areas for locally made programs, which could lead to further reduction of locally made hours in local commercial radio stations. This might also result in production being switched from more Welsh speaking areas and have a detrimental impact on the volume of Welsh language content. There are also plans to further deregulate radio broadcasting obligations. All of this evidence suggests that local Welsh content and radio in Wales could further drastically decrease in the near future due to deregulation and increasing competition in the market. So to summarize the major findings, we have found that while the commercial radio sector in Wales is increasingly struggling and deregulation further might create a shortage of local radio content, the radio market will face further regulatory changes in the coming years. So some of these are even further discussed in the audit. For example, the commercial radio license renewal due in 2022, the impact of community radio, local content quotas and regional output opt-outs on radio, the impact of changes made by Ofcom in 2019 and further deregulation discussions. Also the small scale DAB rollover and DAB digital switchover are discussed, which can have a huge impact on the radio market in Wales. Next, I would like to discuss some of the highlights of the findings about press and news. We have found that print circulation of Welsh newspapers is continuing to drastically decrease. This is the case for all kinds of newspapers, including regional and local daily and weekly newspapers. For example, the Daily Post, the most popular regional newspaper in Wales with a circulation of about 16,000, lost more than 30% of its circulation figure in the last 4 years. On average, we estimated that newspaper circulation is declining by 5 to 10% per year in Wales. And we have found that Wales, as the only UK nation, has no all Wales newspapers. So I'm not coming from Wales, and this was a really interesting finding for me, because it's different if you look at Northern Ireland or Scotland. The only English language Wales-based national newspaper is the Western Mail. However, while it describes itself as the national newspaper for Wales, it is only circulated in South Wales. Additionally, we have found that there has been some consolidation in the market, and now Reach PLC, which also operates in England, and NewsQuest Media Group are the only players in the market now. A 2016 study by the King's College of London found that in the whole of the UK, central and southern Wales are areas that are particularly underserved by local daily newspapers. Additionally, only 58% of parliamentary constituencies in Wales have local daily newspaper coverage. The study also found that most of Wales is dominated by a single publisher. In my opinion, all of these findings are quite alarming if it comes to the newspaper sector. One of the reasons that newspapers are struggling is that news consumption in Wales is changing drastically. So next to TV channels as news source, specifically BBC, Cymru, Wales and ITV, as the most used news source in 2018, social media is the second most used platform for news in Wales, with 45% of people saying that they use these as a source. And this is used more frequently than in any other type of internet news source. The most used news source among social media applications in 2018 was Facebook. So social media can create both opportunities and threats for news media. On social media, traditional media players like newspapers, radio stations, and TV broadcasters locally to internationally can expand audiences, increase geographical reach, respond more quickly than ever before the news events and issues, and interact with news consumers. However, the capacity to respond to these opportunities may be limited by competition for audiences from non-traditional news providers, and yet limited opportunities to profit from social media engagement. However, this also opened the doors for the spread of fake news and misinformation or misleading information, which creates an increasing threat to society and democratic processes also in Wales. In July 2019, a report found that more than half of adults in Wales, which is 53% with a social media account, say that they have seen something they would consider to be fake news in the past 3 months. What we also found is that in Wales, 7% of adults don't follow news about their own nation, which is by far the highest share among the nations, which is in Northern Ireland, 2% and 4% in Scotland. So this is alarming, as well as these adults don't get informed about devolved matters. Still, I would like to highlight that the number of journalists working in Wales is not an issue, even though this is an often used narrative that there are actually many more journalists working today than in the previous years. In Wales, now with 2,700 with numbers based on 2018, compared to less than half of this number of journalists in 2012. But whilst the number of journalists may have increased, other evidence suggests that their employment has become more widely dispersed away from mainstream publishing centers. What we see is more of a change in their status, meaning an increased number of journalists working outside what some would consider mainstream journalism, balanced by increases in other sectors. Some of these jobs are predominantly in online journalism, and many forms of journalism that might now be a kind of hybrid form, involving the journalists working also in areas of public affairs or public relations. Additionally, the average salary of journalists in Wales is way below the UK average, and we still have found that journalism is a very London-centric occupation. So there is more of a difficult, peculiar working situation for journalists, even though the number have increased. In conclusion about the sector developments, we can say that news provision through newspapers is being highly threatened, especially on a local level through the absence of newspapers and the declining circulation figures. While TV is the most used source for news in Wales, also social media becomes popular. This raises concerns about access to local news and the spreading of disinformation. And as you can see, a couple of these points are also highlighted and discussed further in the media audit. So finally, I would like to talk a little bit more about digital media and the internet. just to briefly show that we have found that broadband coverage and mobile internet access in Wales has continuously improved in recent years. In 2018, 165,000 homes in Wales have access to full fiber broadband connections, and 89% of Wales landmass now has good outdoor 4G coverage. We have seen, as you can see in the graph, that while Wales still lags in some aspects around internet access behind UK averages, that there has been a slow catch up, which is really promising. Similar positive trends can be found looking at ownership of internet devices in Wales. In 2019, 75% of the population owned a smartphone. Especially interesting for me was that there was an increasing number of people who owned a wearable internet device, such as smartwatch, with now 29% in Wales, and one in four households in Wales has a smart speaker in 2019. This is the highest share of households compared to the UK average of just 20%. And this device uptake also explains how new media and new forms of digital media play an increasingly important role in Wales. So today, almost 6 in 10 adults in Wales use video on demand services. These range from public service broadcasting services like the BBC iPlayer, ITV Hub, S4C's Click, All4 and My5, to subscription services offered by Netflix and Amazon Prime, for example. Among all of these services, the BBC iPlayer and Netflix had comparable and the highest levels of use, with around 34% for BBC iPlayer and 28% for Netflix, followed by ITV Hub with around 25% of adults in Wales using the service. And next to subscription-based VOD players operating in Wales, other platforms like YouTube enabled new groups of media creators in Wales, including vloggers and or influencers, and bringing Welsh, more traditional media players online. One of the reports I found says that 52% of 12 to 15 year olds in the UK said they watch vloggers or YouTube personalities. So this is really a trend that will further develop. It should not get unnoted that other media creators like micro-influencers have taken up an increasingly important role in Wales, driven also by other platforms like Instagram and TikTok. And not only new media creators benefit from these platforms, but also traditional media players that move online and they explore new audiences and reach other audience. One example is Wales Online. Finally, I would like to briefly talk about the video games industry. The video games industry has become an important sector for the UK, which is now the 6th largest video game market in the world, contributing considerably to the UK economy. However, we have found that Wales and Cardiff do not play an important role on the video game map in the UK yet. With only 30 video game companies, Cardiff hosts a very small share of the UK video game industry. But researchers in the industry have acknowledged that there is great potential in Wales. There has been some very successful stories coming from Wales, including Mike Bithell, who was voted one of the most influential people in the British games industry in 2017, or the company Wales Interactive. You can find more details about this in the media audit as well. So to summarize, Wales slowly closes the gap to internet access in the nation, among the nations, and the device uptake shows the increasing importance for digital media for Wales. There is still major improvement possible to position Wales in the future as a provider of digital media content, like in the video game sector and digital media. For local and international markets, further discussions in the media audit are around, for example, the impact of superfast broadband, 5G, new regulations, and BritBox, which launched last year, as well as the role of digital media for the Welsh language. So I hope some of the findings I highlighted today could give you new perspectives to discuss today. You can find on the presentation my email address if you would like to get in touch with me, or if you have any questions about the findings particularly. I will also be happy to answer any questions in the panel discussions later. And thank you very much for your attention. I give back to Auriel. You're muted, Auriel.
Thank you. Brilliant. Thanks very much indeed, Marlene. Could I ask the panellists to come back onto video, please? We're going to now have a panel session followed by Q&A up till midday. We're very much going to focus now on what needs to happen next in terms of the audit findings that Marlene's just outlined to you and everything which has happened since March last year. Just a little bit of housekeeping. Throughout the Q&A session, I'm sure everybody's done enough Zoom or Teams or whatever webinars by now to know how this works. But in case you haven't, because there may be people coming back from maternity or paternity leave, for whom this is a whole new digital world, we will be monitoring the chat function and also the Q&A session, Q&A function at the bottom of your screen, and passing questions to me to go to the panelists. Do please use the chat function throughout, and we're also going to be sharing a Dupol link. One of the IW team is going to put that in the chat now, thank you, so that you can feed in your own thoughts about the event and also your thoughts on what decision makers in Wales should be prioritising in 2021 and beyond. I'd like to now introduce our panel. Helen Mary Jones is Plaid Cymru Member of the Senedd for Mid and West Wales. She's here in her capacity as Chair of the Senedd's Culture, Welsh Language and Communications Committee. So welcome, croeso, Helen Mary. Gerwyn Evans is Deputy Director of Creative Wales, which launched in January 2020. Creative Wales is an agency of the Welsh Government responsible for promoting our creative sector in Wales and internationally. Gerwyn, welcome. You've had a baptism by fire. We'll hear more about it in a minute. Eleanor Marks is Director of Ofcom Wales. Ofcom is the communications regulator with responsibility for TV and radio, as well as broadband and telecoms. Welcome, Eleanor. And we're also joined once again by Dr. Marlene Komorowski. Great. Helen Mary, I'm going to come to you first, please, and then Eleanor shortly afterwards. Helen Mary, you're here obviously today in your capacity as Chair of the Culture, Welsh Language and Communications Committee. And over the last year, you've undertaken inquiries into both the devolution of broadcasting and the impact of COVID on journalism and the wider creative industries. Our media audit is a snapshot of the media right up until the point that COVID hit. Can you tell us, please, about what you've learned, about what came next? And we particularly want to hear about how that could inform future policy, please.
Well, in terms of what came next and the impact of COVID, I think in terms of the impact of COVID on journalism, on the creative sector, it's very much been a pattern similar to the impact of COVID in other ways, but it's highlighted and exacerbated things that were existing trends. So, for example, you highlighted in your introduction the ongoing issues with UK-wide broadcasters not effectively representing devolved governments, and that became really critical in the early days of the pandemic, where it was actually really, really important that people were getting accurate news. But we saw, for example, the BBC removing their outtake in their breakfast programme, their Wales-specific section of that programme. And we felt that that was particularly damaging because that was an access to Welsh news for people who didn't opt into it, who hadn't chosen to go and look for Welsh content, but it was there for them in Wales. And there was a lot of that at the beginning. I think, to be fair, we found as the pandemic progressed that that did improve, but we'd say that that's still an issue. With regard to everything that we heard in Marlene's presentation about the fragility of journalism in Wales, whether that's national journalism or local journalism, again, those were issues, print journalism particularly, that were there before the pandemic, but the pandemic greatly exacerbated that with the collapse of advertising revenue for newspapers, local and those that aspire to be Wales national, and of course people just not being able to pop out to the corner shop and buy the paper, so that those patterns broke down. One of the interesting things in terms of what's happened next is that as a committee we've heard evidence on a number of occasions about the need for Welsh Government to give consideration to more support for Welsh-based journalism. In the past, they've always understandably been reluctant to do that because they feel that it's very important that journalism is independent. That's shifted in the pandemic, and we now have got Welsh ministers talking in terms of finding an arm's length mechanism to provide some direct financial support for local journalism in Wales and potentially for some of the innovative new national platforms that may be created, and also being more proactive in terms of thinking about how they use government advertising, for example, and where that goes and how that resource is made available, not only to the usual outlets, but particularly to local online outlets. Creative industries more broadly, and I'm galloping through this, Ariel, because I know we've got lots to discuss. But again, the pandemic highlighted things that we knew already. So, for example, ironically, we've been asking, as a political community, we've been asking our national artistic institutions to become more commercial, to raise more of their revenue and from selling tickets, that sort of thing. Those institutions that have begun to do that successfully have actually been hit harder by the pandemic than those who'd remained more traditionally in need of support from the public sector. And one of the things that we as a committee feel we need to do now is to have a conversation, a new conversation, about that balance, about to what extent is it right or even safe to ask our public institutions, especially the big national ones, but local things like local museums too, to try to become more commercial. Does that make them more vulnerable? And we feel there's a need for a broader discussion, of course this is part of that, about what is the role of the public sector and the public purse in supporting cultural life in Wales and in supporting journalism in Wales. And my personal view is that I think the pandemic may make us think about that differently, and the importance to our public life of our institutions, and very crucially, the importance to our democracy of journalism and good quality journalism, and that needs to be resourced. I was very struck by Marlene's evidence that we don't have a lack of journalists in Wales, but they're working for very little money and often in quite fragile, not very secure roles. And that's a real issue, I think, that we need to address. In terms of creative industries as well, I think that it really highlighted for us the extent to which that sector depends on freelance workers and how vulnerable those freelance workers are when that dries up. I think we can be pleased with the support that Welsh Government has provided to freelancers, but I think they'd acknowledge that that's only been a drop in the ocean. So again, there's some questions there about skills and sustainability. That's a very mobile workforce. If we can't provide opportunities for them in Wales, they may very well go elsewhere. And there's a lot more to say, but I think I'd end by saying at this point that what is very clear from the different sorts of evidence that we've received from different sources is that we need to have a proper national conversation, and we would say a national plan, about how we support creative industries in Wales, how we support journalism in Wales. The Welsh Government's got a big role to play in that, but so has civil society. That's why discussions like this are so important. And we would say, I think, that there's a need for more strategic direction, and the Welsh Government's provided a lot of support, spent a lot of money, but we now need moving forward, and that was the right thing to do in an emergency situation. And I must say, with Gavin sitting here, that a lot of our witnesses were very positive about Creative Wales, given that this was an organisation that had just come into being and suddenly found itself dealing with a major national crisis. We had a lot of positive feedback from that. But again, Creative Wales, it can only be as effective as the strategy that they're being asked to deliver. And now's the time we need to have that conversation about that long-term strategy. And just finally, on the devolution of broadcasting, as you say, we were taking evidence on that when the COVID crisis hit. We have come to the conclusion that we now haven't got time to complete that work. And so what we will do as a committee is to publish a report of the evidence we've received so far, both those advocating for devolution, but also those highlighting the issues and the problems, and obviously resourcing it is a big question. And that will be a question we need to come back to in the next Senedd, I think, whichever committee is looking at these issues again, and the Welsh Government will need to come back to again, because obviously there are lots of questions about the future of the licence fee, what does that mean for the future of S4C? So those conversations will need to take place in that wider context, I think. So I hope that's touched on a few of the points you were hoping we might raise, but I'm sure there's much more to say, and hopefully I'm interested to hear what others say and respond maybe to some of that.
Thank you, Helen Mary. Yes, just a few of those points there. in terms of the plethora of issues that have both come to the fore and been further exacerbated by the pandemic.
Just before I get just the other thing also that came out, which I should have mentioned earlier in a number of evidence sessions, was issues around diversity in the media and diversity in the arts. And in terms of building back better, one of the things I think that has been positive, it's made many of our institutions look at themselves differently in that regard, and that may be an opportunity for the future.
Thank you.
I mentioned that sooner.
Thank you, Helen Mary. Yes, and I think the Black Lives Matter moment last summer was particularly important for that. And we've had a number of sessions at the IWA exploring how cultural organisations were both impacted and what they could do differently next time around when we reopen, as well as the ongoing engagement at the moment. Ellen, I'm going to come to you next, because obviously from our perspective, there are really two big areas of focus for our work on both media representation and portrayal, but also on news and misinformation. So if we could talk about both of those, because clearly your work touches on both, but with events, you know, the really shocking events in Washington all too fresh in our minds at the moment, the need to address misinformation and disinformation has never seemed more urgent. You know, the Online Harms White Paper proposes that Ofcom will have new powers to regulate harmful, in inverted commas, online content. And I totally appreciate this is still under development, but can you talk us through what those new powers might be likely to mean, and what would Ofcom be able and unable to do about deliberate misinformation online?
Thank you, Auriel, and thank you to Marlin for a great presentation as well. Diolch am y cyfle I bod yn rhan o trafodaeth am y dyfodol. I really appreciate the chance to be part of the discussion going forward and looking at the future. A little bit about online harms, first of all, then. Ofcom is really delighted to be in a space where it's been indicated that we will take on that responsibility. We won't have any new powers until the legislation comes into place, and that's likely to come into place later this year, 2021. But the themes that are coming up in that and some of the discussions involved are about looking about how we hold people to account, particularly those big players like the Facebooks of this world, about having their processes in place to be able to deal with what they see as harmful content. And that's about enforcing their terms and conditions and about making sure that they do make a really big effort to do that. It's also about making sure that there's extra protections put in there for minors as we go forward, and equally holding those big organisations to account for sharing the information on what they're doing in that space. It's not about for us the taking on individual complaints about individual pieces of online harm or online complaints, but it's about the relationship and managing and holding to account those bigger organisations. We're working with government and parliament at the moment to take that forward. We're acquiring new skills and new capability and capacity to be able to do what we recognise is an enormous task going forward, and actually recognise the enormity and importance of that task as well. We have a duty to promote media literacy. We're very keen on doing that. And we're also going to be asking those organisations what they're doing to promote media literacy as well. The whole focus is about preventing harms for us. I'm sure a lot more of it will get clear as we get forward, but we really do need to be in that space where we know what the legislation says, which, as I said, is going to be later this year. You asked a couple of other things when you talked to me about that. One was about news, and one was about diversity and representation. Since the start of this period, Ofcom has been publishing, first of all, weekly, but now monthly information about the impact COVID has had on our media. And it is showing in that, you know, that people are still very much using the traditional means as their main source of information. And that's a really positive thing in terms of public service broadcast. But it's also showing that a lot of people are getting their news from social media. And many of those are citing that they have seen examples where they think it's false news, fake news, inaccurate news. And at the same time, many people saying that they have actually seen banners from government or other health sources on there giving them information. So it's a positive message in terms of traditional media, but one that we really, really need to be careful about going forward. And that's important for us. And that information is based on a survey of 2,000 people every month. And, you know, what I've been talking about is the December one. So we are very, very careful that we do look at what impact COVID is having here and now and do that and publish it on a monthly basis. In the middle of all of this, of course, we also have our review of public service broadcasting, and we're open to consultation on that at the moment. And one of the things that's been highlighted in that is the importance of public service broadcasting and the importance of getting the news, the right news to the right people at the right time, and how supportive people have been of that. Now, the other part of that that's supportive is the importance of those PSBs in the nation supporting the creative industries in those nations. And that's something that we are mindful of too. We also need to think about, you know, COVID has highlighted some trends that have been going on for some time. More people now stream than ever before. More people are watching other sources of programming, if not news. The concern, of course, around the amount of people streaming programs is they're not seeing news on that. And that does play into the fact that, is the news right? Are you getting local news? Is the news right for you? And the other thing that's very prominent in that review at the moment is we recognise that more and more people want to get their information online. And for the public service broadcasters, there is a question, but does this become public service media? And if there's more emphasis placed on online, then, you know, there are costs and resource implications to that. And we're really keen to hear from people about, do they have information about that? Do they have creative ideas about that? Could you please feed it into our consultation? We really do want to hear about that. So we're in this space, we're hearing lots of information, we're doing lots of research and analysis, and we want to work with people to get the right answer and the right outcome at the end of that. When it comes to diversity and representation, very conscious that people in Wales don't feel that it's the least positive response then in terms of representing their own nation. We would like to see some improvement on that and have said that. And equally, we've been doing work with some of the broadcasters to point out we want to see more representation, and the Black Lives Matter made a big difference in that space. And I really welcome the fact that S4C have recently appointed a diversity officer. I think people are taking it more seriously. There's more to do, but it's a really important part of our work going forward. I think I'll stop at that point because I'm conscious we have a lot to discuss and a short time to do it.
A lot to get through, yes. And I think I know Angela in the comments has talked about how public service media is an important concept. We'll come back to that, I think, in the Q&A afterwards. Geraint, could I come to you next, please? Creative Wales is only a year old, so almost happy birthday. But many of our audience won't be familiar with who you are and what you do as an organisation. Your work obviously touches on many of the issues that our media audit has highlighted. I appreciate you had to really quickly shift emphasis once COVID hit. But could you just talk us through, I mean, today's audience is both a mixture of very, very specialised media people and others for whom we're going to need to unpack things a little bit more, because this is a really important conversation. Could you talk us through the original role and remit of Creative Wales at its inception? And then let's talk a little bit about what happened since 23rd of March.
Thank you, Ariel. Good morning. Bordda, everybody. If it's not too late to say, Happy New Year to everyone that's listening in as well. And thank you to the IWA for inviting me along this morning to talk about the role of Creative Wales and what we've been up to during the pandemic, and also what we can look forward to over the next few months as we see the green shoots of recovery with the vaccination, etc. So as you say, our first birthday will actually be on January the 29th. That's when we officially launched. So the majority of my team who were brought into Creative Wales have basically worked on nothing but COVID. Because as you say, Oriel, our kind of original business plan and what we focused on doing. We had to very quickly kind of tailor to a COVID recovery for the sector. And what that entailed was basically repackaging our budget to support the key sectors that we've been asked to support. Those three key sectors are film and TV, music, and the digital sector. I'll speak very briefly about each of those. But underpinning our work across each of those three sectors is the need to develop skills and talent, as has been discussed by Mary, Helen Mary and Eleanor. Skills, especially the diversity and inclusivity of our skills offer, is a major priority for Creative Wales going forward. But if I just take a step back to March, basically what we did, first of all, was to support our music venues. We were one of the first parts of government to provide any financial support into any part of the economy, because our music venues are, the sustainability within the music venues is difficult anyway. So we needed to provide financial support into that sector quite quickly and did so. We followed that up then with some TV and digital development funds. So working with our PSBs, supporting our independent production companies through the TV fund, and supporting our computer game companies, our animation companies, and our digital companies through the Digital Development Fund. And that is bearing fruit. So the projects that we supported back in June last year, we're starting to see some of those projects on TV, with the TV projects we supported, and we're also starting to see some of the digital projects take those ideas forward, secure additional investment, et cetera. So some real positive things that came out of what were an emergency recovery fund. Moving on from that then, we obviously hold the pen for the guidance, making sure that each part of the creative industries were fully aware of the rules and regulations about working, especially within the film and TV production side. We work quite closely with our colleagues across the UK to ensure a consistency of messaging with the return to work and how productions could work. Because to the point with journalism that's been made, there was an issue with consistency of messaging, specifically around being able to work within the film and TV production sector. So we worked on that quite considerably with the industry. And when I say we worked with the industry, what we did was set up industry-led working groups. So we have an industry-led working group that sits behind each of our priority areas. So a film and TV one, a music one, and a digital one. We also have a skills group as well. So my belief and kind of the raison d'etre of Creative Wales is to work in partnership with the industry, and to really deliver what they need. So we hopefully have done that. And thank you to Helen Mary for the kind words. And we've had a lot of positive feedback in terms of what we did within the first year, which is really positive for us as a team. But we need to take that now and look forward as well. But Helen Mary also mentioned the freelancers and how we support the freelancers. So after being involved myself within the first two rounds of the Economic Resilience Fund, ERF, we were then called on when we secured the consequential budget from the UK-wide announcement to support the culture sector across the UK, the 1.57 billion announcement, which resulted in close to 60 million in Wales. It was my job and some of the members of my team to kind of design and deliver the Culture Recovery Fund. So a lot of my team's time has been taken up over the past few months working with the Arts Council and other partners in delivering that fund. And we've also run the Freelancer Fund as well. So a huge part of what we intended to do has obviously been COVID recovery related. That's not to say we haven't done some positive stuff in terms of things we wanted to do in terms of our business plan. We've supported numerous productions. So if anyone watches TV tonight, if anyone watches Pembrokeshire Murders, we invested in that. We invested in Roald and Beatrix, if anyone watched that over Christmas. War of the Worlds was one of the first high quality dramas to go back into production in the UK. We invested significantly in that. And there's lots of things coming down the track as well this year. And most people will be aware that we've invested in Lucasfilm. Lucasfilm will be coming into Wales next year to invest in a production that will be one of their flagships on Disney Plus. So very, very important for us to not just secure and bring in inward investment opportunities, but to work with our indigenous production companies as well. So we want to create a fine balance in terms of our budget allocation between securing inward investments and supporting our indigenous production companies as well. So again, lots of positive things there. We secured National Film and Television School to come to Wales just before Christmas as well. We're working with BBC Three to do some work there, aligning to some other work we've been doing with the BBC. And just to pick up on Eleanor's point, we really want to develop our relationship with the PSBs. So we will be designing MOUs and agreeing MOUs with BBC Wales, S4C, Channel 4 and ITV Wales this year, hopefully, now that we can refocus our efforts away from COVID stuff, hopefully anyway, towards the end of the year.
Geraint, can I ask you please about your priorities for 2021? Because I think that's one of the challenges for all of us, isn't it? There's a lot to do. There is all sorts of existing work and all sorts of new work, and yet the world has also changed and we also need to keep up. So in terms of priorities for 2021, what's the main thing you want to achieve this year?
So in terms of our business plan for 2021, we worked a financial year, so we're still working on the business plan to secure the budget for next year. Or to kind of allocate the budget we have for next year. So we've just appointed our non-exec board. So they were supposed to be appointed back early April, May time last year. Obviously, all appointments were put on hold during the initial lockdown. So we've managed to appoint our non-exec board now. They've been in place since November. They've met a couple of times. We're busy agreeing our work plan for next year, and that will focus on the three priority areas, but with a huge emphasis on skills as well. We really need to up our game on skills, especially with kind of the fallout from the pandemic and the need to invest in that area anyway. It will remain a significant priority for us. But we will continue to invest in productions. We've got a really exciting pipeline of productions that we want to invest in. Our music venues probably are still going to struggle for the next few months because of the situation. So is there a need for a Culture Recovery Fund 2, as an example, for the music venues and event space? There's an argument for that, definitely. We want to work more proactively with our digital sector. So computer games has been mentioned in the presentation. We think there's a huge opportunity to grow that sector in Wales. So our priorities will be around the three areas that we've already identified. But as Helen and Mary alluded to as well, what do we do as Welsh Government in terms of supporting the news and journalism space? There's a number of options we're looking into at the moment. There's an ongoing Cultural Welsh Language Committee inquiry, which we're looking into towards the end of this month. So we're coming to a conclusion in terms of what the potential support Welsh Government can put into that sector, because it was one of the areas that we took the most correspondence for during the pandemic in terms of how we support in local media, how we support in local community radio, et cetera, so definitely something we need to think about how Welsh Government can support in that space, and we'll be bringing that to a conclusion very soon.
Okay, thank you. Helen Mary, I'm going to come back to you next, because I think one of the things that COVID-19 has done has meant that devolution has cut through to the average person in the street or the average person at home, because there's so few people in the streets these days, in a way that 20 years of devolution didn't do, because those decisions, what the rules are day to day, affects all of us in a way that it never did before. And people have understood that decisions are made differently and made for different places by different organisations, by different bodies, by different authorities, governments, administrations, parliaments. And Parliament's role in holding those decision makers to account is really important. So conversations about the media in Wales often and very understandably lead us to a discussion about more powers for the Senedd. So could we just talk a bit about what are the problems that regulation and media policy, wherever it sits, what are the problems that it needs to solve? And what else do you think, as the committee, what else do you think Welsh Government could be doing to address those issues using the powers that it has today?
Well, one of the issues, and we've touched on this already in what Eleanor had to say, is about counteracting fake news and misinformation, and whether that's deliberate fake news and misinformation, which is some of it certainly in social media is, or whether some of it is UK-wide broadcasters not accurately reporting the different situations in the different old administrations. And that came up in a number of our evidence sessions. And I think the Welsh Government can be done within those spaces. And one of the things that, and Gavin has just touched on this as well, is some direct Welsh Government support, particularly for good quality local journalism. Yeah, the market does not, Welsh Government ministers will often talk about only stepping into spaces where there is market failure. And that's right. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. It's absolutely clear from our evidence, and it came out again in Marlon's presentation, that there is a real market failure when it comes to good quality local journalism. And we heard some good examples, a local newspaper in Caerphilly that has got off the ground and has really survived, a similar attempt to do something similar in the Potolbod area didn't work, and some of that may be affected by the socioeconomic makeup of the area, and there just might not be enough money in that economy for an advertising-based model for local journalism to survive. So we're really pleased as a committee that the Welsh Government has shifted its perspective on this. And I think the key thing going forward will be looking at how that can be done in a really effective arm's length way, where there can't, not only would there not be any interference in journalistic content, but where it was seen that there could be no interference in journalistic content. So that's one thing that needs to be done. I think we've asked Welsh Government as a committee to engage actively with the Ofcom consultation. And Welsh Government will need to engage really actively with the consultations around the future of the licence fee and play a more proactive role. How that will be received, of course, is not in Welsh Government's gift. And certainly, as a committee, we believe that the pandemic has highlighted the importance of public service broadcasting. As you said, Ariel, you know, it's absolutely vital that people understand what rules apply where. I think it's undoubtedly the case that people are much more aware of the impact of devolution on their day-to-day lives because of this, and that's a good thing, even though it's, you know, come out of something so terrible. So there's something for me about how we can maintain that understanding, build on that understanding, and there's a role for all elected representatives in that. I think it'd be interesting to have a discussion about what the role of the Assembly Commission is, because we've talked a lot about the role of the Welsh Government potentially in investing in good quality local journalism. We might need to have a further conversation, I think, about whether there's something that the Commission ought to be doing, because that would be more clearly on a cross-party basis. And I think it brings me back then, in terms of what can be done in existing powers, is that need for a clear strategy around the creative industries and a clear strategy around support for news and support for journalism and accurate information. And one of the things that we would say as a committee is really important is that those strategies need to be cross-department. It can't all sit on Geraint's shoulders. If you think about a strategy for creative industries, it's got to involve the economy, it's got to involve international affairs. It obviously involves the Welsh language. We'd argue it involves education. We talking to the National Library, for example, there are huge amounts of resources that the National Library has that could be made available to schools in Wales that need digitising. So there's lots of practical things like that. But even things like planning and transport, you know, once we can open up our cultural venues, it's no good having our cultural venues, let's say, in Cardiff or Swansea open if people in those communities can't get to perform, in communities in the valleys, can't get to performances in those venues because the trains don't run at the right time. And so we really need to make sure, I think, that a strategy going forward doesn't just sit in the Deputy Minister for Culture's department, but goes right the way across. And I think the other thing that Welsh Government, we would want Welsh Government to do going forward, is we heard a lot of evidence suggesting that there is a bit of a tendency for Welsh Government to go to certain players in the field and not others. Now, in a time of crisis, you can't expect the government to be able to engage with every single, you know, group of freelancers. That's not possible. But moving forward, I think questions need to be asked about when the government's talking to the sector, who are they talking to make sure that that dialogue is as comprehensive. And that's not a criticism of what Creative Wales has done in the last year at all. But we did hear a lot of people coming before the committee and saying, well, you're the first people who've asked us about this, whether that's this group of freelancers, that particular cultural institution, that group of organisations supporting live music venues. And we really need to crack that. Because if we're going to develop a really robust strategy, we've got to have everybody's voices heard. And this, of course, is part of that discussion. And I'd like to add to what others have said about our gratitude as a committee to the IWA for putting this series of events on, because we think it's an important contribution. I mean, again, that's a bit of a skating over what a huge number of things that we think the Welsh Government can be doing. But the last thing I'd say is there are opportunities to do things better that have been highlighted. We've already talked about diversity. We've talked about that in terms of Black people and people of colour, but there's also issues, for example, about working class culture and its representation and how well or badly we've done that. How diverse is the way that we represent Welsh-speaking communities? I think we probably argue that it can be a bit one-dimensional. So one of the things that we really think is important is that we don't go back to the old ways. Every time I hear somebody say, let's get back to normal, I say, no, thank you very much, because normal was pretty awful, you know, in terms of access to the arts, for example, for lots of particularly working class young people in Wales, not good at all. So let's not go back to normal. And we talk about building back better in the sector. Well, let's not just do that. Let's build back well. Again, better than what, you know, in some areas, better than almost nothing. So this is an opportunity, I think, for Welsh Government to make some difficult decisions and have some difficult conversations with people too, because in order to be able to do more of some things, we may have to stop doing some of the things that we've always done in the past. And that again,
thank you. Thanks. Thanks very much, Helen Mary. I just want to pick up on a few of those points raised by you and by others over the last little while. There's one thing from a news perspective. There's one thing, obviously. And could I just ask the panelists to go back on mute, please? It may be my crossing my arms that gets interference with my microphone. Sorry. You know, there's one thing sort of putting information out there. What we're actually talking about in a lot of these situations is engagement, because it's about how does a citizen play their role in a nation, in whatever shape or form they may choose to do so. So there are other conversations, and for those of you on Twitter, go and have a look at a tweet from the Wales Audit Office last week about an event that they helped organise with partners in Nova Scotia about misinformation as well. Some really interesting stuff coming out of that, but also about how people both read what they want to read, but also read things that reinforces their own values and beliefs that are already in existence. So there's a huge amount of data and evidence around that, but also a lot of data and evidence in terms of building back better or differently or well or brilliantly, however we may choose to or more equally or more fairly, however we may choose to describe it. And I appreciate there are lots of challenges about that, and it would be great if we could all agree on one phrase, but that's probably ain't going to happen. But there's something there about, I've just lost my train of thought, how annoying. There's something there about, it's not the radical changes, it's the little shifts that are going to need more oomph and more emphasis to embed and to keep hold of. So spotting where those are and knowing where they are and what they are and why they are important to people is really important. And one of the things that came out of this cross-Atlantic, transatlantic conversation between Wales and Nova Scotia last week was how in times of crisis, and this is really human behavioural stuff, people go to the relationships they already have. And this is something that we saw at the IWA. Some of those grooves of conversation being even more entrenched than necessarily widened during COVID, because people go to people they know. And it's very difficult to know who you don't know without getting too Rumsfeldian about it. You know, so how do you find people who are involved in things? And unless you have those horizontal spaces, and I'd like to say that, you know, think that IWA is one of those spaces, how do you have those horizontal spaces for cross-sector conversations? I'm really conscious we've just got loads and loads of stuff to pick out here. And that's partly why I said very clearly at the beginning, this is the can opener conversation. You know, we've got lots more still to come. Tomorrow we're going to do a deep dive into skills. Wednesday into news and media. We're going to pick up on that there. And then next week, focusing on S4C. I'm going to ask people in the who are participants today, two questions, please. Could you share an example of what you think good local news is, where it is, and any links to it that you think are good? So a bit of homework for you now, please, in the chat. But also have a think about any more questions that you want us to come back to the panelists with now. We've got a few here, so I'm going to go to them now. First question, is from Geraint Talbin-Davis, who has been involved in our media group for a long time. So hi, Geraint, nice to see you here. What confidence can we have in Ofcom's approach to holding the big organisations to account? So Eleanor, we're coming to you. When some would argue that it has aided and abetted the decline in local provision. And I know that this has also been echoed in a comment on the DuPol link that has come around. Light touch regulation hasn't worked, and there should be a role for the Senedd going forward. So, Eleanor, could I come to you first on that, please? You're on mute, sorry. Easily done.
Yeah, obviously the first time I've ever used Zoom, not. The question of light touch regulation, my starting point would be to say that Ofcom actually implements UK-wide legislation in this space. We operate under what the legislation says it is we need to do and hold people to account on that basis. The direction in recent years has been for deregulation. Therefore, that is what we regulate. What I would say is that DCMS have just done a consultation about radio, and we're waiting to see what that says in the new year and what those challenges would be in that space. And I think there is a challenge here, which is not just about deregulation. And I fully acknowledge the importance of local news for local people so that they know what's happening. And COVID has brought that out big time. So I think there is a challenge for all of us in this space. But I would also say that one of the things we need to think about is what other challenges are facing radio at the moment. Commercial radio in Wales, we heard Marlin talk about that earlier and the financial challenges that go with that. It's the same on commercial PSB challenges and how the financial situation goes alongside that. So I think regulation is really important. And I think I've heard many times the accusation that Ofcom doesn't do what it can do. We do what we can do with the regulation that we have and the law that we have at the moment in that space. And I've not written down the second part of your question.
So it sounds to me, and the second part of the question was really about a role for the Senedd in this, because I appreciate you're regulating UK-wide legislation, but there's a clear role for the Senedd here, isn't there, to make sure that Wales's voice is even better heard, and Welsh Government too, more strongly heard in shaping that legislation.
I think there's a role for people to contribute to those consultations. I genuinely think that, you know, stories in Wales need to be reported. We need to have the journalists that find the good stories and report them. We need to have the space on air that they get reported. And, you know, we will do what we can to help and nurture in that space. And we're interested in doing into research and finding how this is going and many other things. What the Senedd chooses to do clearly is a political question that I'm not going to step into that space. But it is important that we all work remembering that, you know, civic society means that people need to be engaged and hear what they need to be engaged about.
Thank you. I'm going to come, Geraint, to you next with a question from Ruth McElroy, which is responding to Helen Mary's comments about cultural venues and their commercial challenges. And I think they've been sort of laid out very, very clearly, those differences. And Geraint and Robin Wilkinson in the chat have also highlighted the plight of music venues too, so have others. Do we need to, though, go further and reconceive key cultural assets and key cultural spaces like cinemas, art centres and music venues as community assets? Because one of the problems is that we label things, don't we? And then it becomes about that thing and what it does, rather than about the wider role that it necessarily plays in a local community. So we know that place is increasingly important, don't we? In terms of where people live, how they live, what they do, what they feel able to do, how they're able to contribute to that community and understand both what's going on and the role that they could play contributing to that. But do we need to go further and say these are community assets, and what difference would that make? Geraint.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I think it's definitely one that requires further exploration in terms of what does that mean from a budget perspective, in terms of designating them as community assets. I think the live music inquiry, the Cultural and Welsh Language Live Music Inquiry, picks up this as one of the recommendations around the policy remit about supporting live music venues and having kind of the policy strengthened that change of use is more difficult for some of these assets. So I think that's definitely something we're looking into, and we'll respond to the Cultural West Language Committee inquiry by the end of this month.
Garen, can I just pick up there on, you see, one of the things that, so you're talking here about responding to Cultural Welsh Language Communications Committee. Mm. I'd like to know what sort of role and engagement do you have with the sort of economy, infrastructure and skills committees, for instance? Because again, that's one of the cross-government aspects that we want to try and say, this should be standing operating business procedures for everybody, shouldn't it?
Okay, yeah. So I'm just picking on that as an example, but I don't have any kind of exposure to the economy committee, but what I do have is plenty of exposure to the economy team, the regeneration team and all the other relevant teams within Welsh Government. I've got lots of years working in and around that arena in terms of economic development, the regeneration. And I think there's a huge opportunity for the creative industries to be one of the key solutions almost to the town centre regeneration problem. It's going to only get worse, I think, following the pandemic in terms of what a town centre looks like and how that provides all the things that civic society needs. But I definitely think, and conversations have already started about the role creative industries can play in that and kind of the future of town centre. So placemaking is definitely something that's on our agenda. And I work across government, whether it's regeneration, economy, skills. We've got those links and we're keen to build on those links and kind of at a base level really show the economic importance of the creative industries to government colleagues. I come from a tourism background, and for years we had to argue our case for tourism being an important economic contributor. We now need to do the same for the creative industries, I think.
Yeah, okay. Just an IWA plug for Understanding Welsh Places, which some of our IWA media colleagues may not know of, which has data and information about every place in Wales that has more than 1,000 residents in it. And can I ask one of the IWA team to put that in the chat, please? We've got a question that enables you to compare places and dependence and independence across different places. So really good first point of call for data about a place and what kind of, it also has cultural assets in there too. Yeah. Question from Robert Bruce. Universities understandably focus on teaching and research in journalism, but publishing tends to be limited and designed for student consumption. If funding could be found, would any universities be capable of creating online local news content as part of its civic mission, potentially? So whether focusing on communities that they serve, promoting progressive ideas coming out of latest research across departments, benefiting from the trust of the university brand name, because trust obviously is a big issue in all of this, isn't it? We haven't explicitly talked about that yet. And giving students an opportunity to become more actively involved in local journalism. Marlene, do you have any experience of that? I know Joe Meck at Cardiff University does something akin to that, and maybe somebody in the chat can tell us more if that's the case.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure, it was around universities focusing on teaching and research, and if funding could be found, do you think universities would be capable of creating online local content?
Yes, I mean, the question could be if it's the role of a university to take this up. I think if it comes to teaching future journalists and future media makers in Wales, the universities have a huge impact. And also the programs we have in Wales are quite unique. Joe Meck is really internationally well known for its journalism school. For example, before I started working in Wales, I already knew about Joe Meck, and everyone I knew who was researching journalism went to the annual journalism conference in Cardiff, organized by Joe Meck. So this is really a huge strength we have already. And this also, I think, has an impact on how many journalists and people interested in media we have in Wales, which is quite a positive position we have. And my numbers showed as well, like the number of journalists we have in Wales, which is rising. If it comes to preparing them for this changing landscape that we have, I think universities can do more. The problem is that the role of a university is more of an academic sense of what is on researching journalism, and then you have the actual more opening schools who teach journalists how to do journalism. And this is not what I see the role of JOMEC normally. JOMEC is for me the school who researches journalists, journalism and news. And then you have to have more of the programs which actually teach journalists how to handle this new landscape with digital news and social media and so on.
Hello, Mary. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Marlene. Hello, Mary. Very short, because
just
I know
conscious of time. Yeah. That the universities could have a role to play, I think, but of course they tend to be in the bigger towns and cities that are actually quite well served by local journalism. Yeah. What we found was that it was the poorer communities, and particularly some of our valley communities and isolated rural communities, where the gaps were. So it would be harder for the universities, I think, to help there.
Yeah, although the brave new world of digital may counterintuitively help with that. I'm very conscious of time. We've gone past 12 o'clock. I wanted to just flag a couple of questions. One is obviously a discussion in the chat about the counterintuitive findings about the numbers of journalists and how they've increased despite the challenges that we've identified. Should regulators, educators, and policymakers be thinking more about quality rather than quantity? And also a question about is anybody attempting to measure the impact of disinformation or misinformation on the forthcoming Senate elections? We at the IWA held our annual general meeting, and if you were an IWA member, you'd have been invited, looking at misinformation. So do join up and we can share that with you. And there was a question also about whether Garen could provide a bit more detail on how you plan to develop the video game sector, which I'm afraid we're not going to have time to. Sorry, Dav. So sometimes these panelists and Q&A sessions are frustratingly short, and it feels like one of those today. There's a lot more that we can unpick into this. I'd really like to say a huge thank you to all of our panelists, and also particularly to Marlene for your hard work and commitment under such challenging circumstances with the audit. Thank you also to the University of South Wales for sponsoring the audit, and to colleagues at S4C, BBC Wales, Cymru Wales, ITV Cymru Wales, Cardiff University, Ofcom Wales and Clwstwr for their contributions too. I'd really like to thank everybody who's attended today. I want to really emphasise again that this is the start of the next phase of our conversation from the IWA's perspective. We're not presenting the media audit as here you go, wrapped up with a bow, off you go. This is a very, very different conversation that we all need to have now. We're very clear that there hasn't been the improvement to media and the democratic deficit that anyone was hoping for since 2015. We need to do more. Very fundamentally, we need to do more. And we've set out, and we will set out, what we think the shape of that should be. But we do want the details of that to be developed in partnership with those who work in the media and policy. At the IWA, one of the joys of the IWA is that we don't represent a sector, trade or interest. And I think that's really, really important in this particular space as well, because it matters to us all. We don't have skin in the game. It's not going to affect our individual jobs. It's very important that we remember that. So there's an independent, non-party political, non-government sponsored space for this discussion. This is about citizenship as well. We really want to hear from you. Please do use the link in the chat room, and we'll share it in our follow-up emails too and on Twitter. Share your thoughts, and please let us know how we can follow up with you too. Never assume that everybody knows everybody else. That's also important. We want to bring new people into the conversation too. So if there are people that you think would enjoy engaging with us over the next three sessions, do please let us know. There's still time to sign up for the other three media events in the series. Just go to iwa.wales and follow the links on our event pages. I'm really looking forward to carrying on the conversation.